This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure.
The heavens, no man, no weapon formed against, yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion to us. Justice is juxtapositioning us. Justice for all just ain't specific enough. One son died, his spirit is revisiting us. True and living, living in us. Resistance is us. That's why Rosa sat on the bus. That's why we walk through Ferguson with our hands up. When it go down, we woman and man up. They say stay down, and we stand up. Shots, we on the ground. The camera panned up. King pointed to the mountaintop, and we ran up.
Good morning. Welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. You know this voice already. It's Levin Miller. So good to have you in my company. So good to let you have me in your company. That's what it is. I'm so happy to be here with you this morning. I don't know what it is that you people do at 11 o'clock, but whatever it is that you do, I'm happy that you do that do with me. Now, you know, it's nothing like when you build a reputation, Allendon. The people called my personal phone yesterday and said, Levin, there's absolutely no way that it could have been the sovereign lady's birthday and you not play Rule Britannia. And so because I'm a man of my word, right, I'm going to get that out of the way, right? Yesterday was Her Majesty's birthday. For those of you that are repulsed by the colonial trappings, I say to you, you drive past Parliament Square every day, that looks exactly the way it looks when the Brits had it, right? Except it's less greenery. Notwithstanding that, you can't outrun your European underpinnings. They are the things that make you, although you are African, because they have, you know, kind of blend themselves in the way you do what it is that you do as a Bahamian. So you have an interesting twist as a Bahamian. You have some Caribbean aspect because they met some of us here, and then a couple of us kind of matriculated through the slave trade, so you got a little bit of African in you. And then the Europeans kind of ran it all, so you kind of got some European in you. And the Spanish took it over one or two times, so who knows? You may have a little bit, of Suave Mendez in you as well. Notwithstanding that, Allendon, I've got to play it. Yesterday was the Queen's 95th birthday. She looks to be in good strength. You saw her on Saturday. She is able to get unaided. I want you to think about this. This woman at 95 can get unaided out of the backseat of a car in and out, and then take the stairs at 95. That is amazing. Rule Britannia, Allendon, for those that want to, with me, pay homage to our sovereign lady.
Thank you.
There you have it. There you have it. Just like I promised. Britain's fight song. That's what they call it. Britain's fight song. It's not the national anthem, because you know the national anthem is God Save the Queen. But somebody, I'll get the name of the person that wrote that, somebody decided that Britain need a fight song. I like it. It makes me want to go to war every time I hear it. Anyway, so I got that out of the way. I'm joined in the studio today with Captain Glenn Bain. And he was here with me a couple of weeks ago. The last time he was here, we talked about a little bit of his past. I want to talk to him a bit today about the industry that he's in the future, right? I don't know, unless you live under a rock, you must have heard of the carnage that has visited our neighborhoods just as short as a week ago. And I am of the opinion, this is the gospel according to Levin, that the reason why our boys find themselves in the position where gang violence can reach them is because they lack skill. They don't have the ability to do anything else. And wielding a gun, though it requires some skill, is not necessarily one of the most difficult skills to learn. All right. It doesn't require any scholastics. It doesn't require any excessive study. It doesn't require any excessive class time. Actually, the best way to become good at gun violence or to become good at weaponry is to practice it, right? And the difficulty with that is we don't want our boys practicing the use of guns. And so we must replace that with something. And I am of the opinion that one of the things that I think would be most valuable in the inculcation of our boys is if we taught them that the world, which is, I think, made up of about 70% water, that the world has so much to offer beyond the boundary of land. And so I brought Cap in with me this morning because I want to kind of talk to him about where does he see the industry going and how can we get younger men trained up in the skill of navigation, trained up in the skill of seafaring, so that they are able to move outside of the Bahamas, so that they are able to venture across the world and see the horizons that are available to them. Again, Captain Glenn Bain joins me. Cap, good morning. How are you?
Good morning to you, Leva, and good morning to the Bahamas. I'm doing very well, thanks.
You look well. Well, the last time you were here, we were talking about you in your former incarnation. But outside of your time as a Defense Force officer, you spent some time as the port controller, deputy port controller.
Deputy port controller, ship inspector, port state inspector for the Bahamas, and senior nautical inspector with Bahamas Maritime Authority.
So what exactly are your qualifications with regards to maritime sailing and seafaring?
Well, first of all, I'm a captain. Mm-hmm. For any ship, 3,000 tons, up to 3,000 tons mm-hmm. In size. That's about the size. If anybody knows about the Fiesta Mail, the mailboat, mm-hmm. and some of Betty K ships, anything about that size.
Okay.
So being a captain, you have to go through various standardized training.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, you get a certificate along with some sea time.
Mm-hmm.
Where you show that you have been sailing and you know about this thing. And once you become that captain, you can basically work on a ship anywhere in the world, on a ship up to 3,000 tons, doing international trade. Of course, we got local domestic certifications as well, like the A and B class licenses.
Right.
But yeah, that's seafarers, more than any other job fields, job areas that I can think of, have to do what you call standard certification and training
mm-hmm.
in order to work on board an international ship.
Okay. And the training is international, which means if you get it, you can kind of use it no matter where it is that you find yourself in the world.
If you're working on board a ship, this training is international, yes.
Okay. So, in your opinion, Cap, how difficult is it to cause there to be a national standard of training? I know we have the LMC?
LJM.
LJM.
Right.
I know we have them, right? But I mean, you know, again, that only catches a small pocket of young people, right? How do we nationalize things like navigational science in our schools? How do we nationalize things like seafarer training in our schools? How do we make it something that captures the boys that may be young men that we have identified that will be trouble, right? So we have the schools already for them. Sure, we had things like the YEASH program. We know that these boys were not going down the right direction or down the right path. How difficult, from your perspective, would it be to nationalize that kind of training?
It's not difficult at all. And as a matter of fact, it's going on for the past, I'd say, about 12, 14 years
mm-hmm.
by way of the Bahamas Maritime Cadet Corps program.
Okay.
Where they catch them from high school, 10th mm-hmm. grade to 12th grade, mm-hmm. and they do 2-3 years of cadet corps program as a maritime in the maritime industry, mm-hmm. and this was started. It's an initiative of the Bahamas Maritime Authority. Mm-hmm. We had Dudley Martinborough started it up. Mm-hmm. And he held it for a long time. Now right. we got Paul Miller.
Yeah, Dudley was there when I did mine.
Yeah, we got Paul Miller. So that and the problem with that is a lot of people go through that. And, mm-hmm. and we have hundreds and right now I assume thousands of people that went through that program.
Uh-huh.
And many of them came back to me. They said to me, Cap, I have a problem. I've been through the program, mm-hmm. I've been off to Holland College in Canada at PEI, Prince Edward Island, and I've certified myself, and I can't find any ship. I can't get a job. Nobody can get me on a ship.
Mm-hmm.
So no matter what program we do or we put in place, we need some leverage to allow or get them into ships, on board mm-hmm. ships, so that they can have a job, they can work. And
I don't get the difficulty. The Bahamas has the third largest ship registry in the world. I mean, could we not work that out to be some sort of an agreement?
We used to be the third at some point, the fourth. Now we're probably the seventh or eighth.
Okay.
But we still have a lot. We have like 14, 15 other ships carrying the Bahamas flag.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have a relationship with the Bahamas ship owners because okay. there's a ship owners association.
Mm-hmm.
From way back in the time when I was in the BMA, we tried to engage, and I was advised by one or two politicians that the ship owners agreed
mm-hmm.
that they will give us some leverage.
Right.
But we got to have on our end somebody from the Bahamas Maritime Authority who's doing the legwork to actually get these behemoths engaged on behemoth ships.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we had Campbell Shipping, which mm-hmm. did an extremely good job.
Mm-hmm.
And thanks to Lowell J. Mortimer for using his initiative at the top, where they would engage a lot of behemoths because they would actually employ them on the ships that came under their remit,
mm-hmm.
right? They were ship managers for some 14, 15 large ships, and they managed for themselves and for other companies. And by way of being the ones crewing those ships, they were able to, once behemoths were certified, they were able to link them to the jobs on those ships.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, based on my understanding, they no longer have the full remit of managing those ships.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of fall by the wayside as far as getting behemoths on those ships as readily as we used to.
Right.
But we need somebody from the inside of the Bahamas Maritime Authority, in my opinion, right, to be tasked with finding a route, finding
like a liaison?
Way, like a liaison between the ship owners
mm-hmm.
and the qualified seafarers of the Bahamas.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a lot of qualified seafarers that mm-hmm. sitting around, they can't find anything, they can't get on board a ship. Because in the world fleet, we got what? Some 2.5 million seafarers,
mm-hmm.
right? And the lion's share goes to Singapore, Philippines, and then you got India, you got Ukraine, you got a lot of countries that have institutions in their country with their government sponsors
okay.
to push their seafarers through those institutions. And then they have a lot of organizations set up to link, once that person is qualified, with the international fleet,
mm-hmm.
right? And we have one here in the Bahamas, too, that tried to link. But they don't have the leverage because mm-hmm. we don't have a system in place like those other countries that breed seafarers for the world fleet.
Now, how lucrative is the profession of navigation?
Well, somebody going on board to be an able seaman, for example.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, when you're on board a ship, you're eating, you're living free, you're eating free, you're traveling free. Everything is free.
Right.
If you want to buy a soda or a beer when you go ashore, well, that's on you, right?
Right.
The average salary for somebody starting out without experience and mm-hmm. skills would be anywhere from, say, $800 a month
mm-hmm.
to $1,000 a month. And that's on a general ship.
Right.
Right? Without skills. This person has had to do the STCW basic 4-core module training.
Right.
And eventually they do an able seaman training and they get more money.
Right.
But when they start out, you get $800 a month. Let's say you join a ship for 6 months at a time. Because
mm-hmm.
that's kind of standard for cargo ships.
Right.
You join for 6 months. And during that 6 months, your $800 basically, they're sitting in the bank every month.
Right.
You unless you want to waste it, you could waste it. But if you really go to sea And you go in country, you're away from home. You don't have to take your girlfriend to the movies. You don't have to do the things you normally do at home. You don't have to buy gas for your car.
Yeah. Right? You don't have to have a girlfriend. You could say, I get an OTC.
So 80% of that money is usually saved. Mm-hmm. So after your first voyage, you would have a couple thousand dollars in the bank.
Okay.
Now, if you didn't sail and you got a regular job in a bank or wherever you got a regular job, you wouldn't have a couple thousand dollars in the bank after 6 months.
Right.
Right? So the advantage is not, I'm making this money, but it's not as much as the fellow who I left home, and he's a contractor. He's in construction, and he's making more money than me. But he's spending more money than me because every day he got to find something to eat.
Right.
Every day he got... So when you come back after 6 months, you got enough to make a down payment on a car.
Right.
Right? And 4 or 5 years of that, you get enough to make a down payment on a house.
Mm-hmm.
The average bloke who's going out doing the regular construction job, hotel job or whatnot, he takes him, 8 to 10 years before he could make a down payment for a house.
Right.
So you get that big advantage because the ship is taking care of you. Mm-hmm. In most cases, they even give you the coverall and the uniform to wear.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's no cost to you. You're seeing the world. You're getting this type of experience. And by the time you get 25, 26, you got your car, you got your home, you got everything you want.
Mm-hmm.
And the good thing about this is you don't need any qualifications to do this.
All right.
Once you do the 4-core module training, well, of course, you need to know how to read and write.
Right.
But we have the big advantage because in the world fleet, English is really the language that all ships have to convert to.
Right.
English and French.
Okay.
But English, of course, is the biggest one.
Okay.
So we have an English. We grew up speaking English.
Right.
So we already have the edge on the Filipino and the Ukrainian, and because they come on these ships and they struggle to communicate.
Okay.
And communication is one of the more, you know, that's a really serious skill to have to be working in the team on board a ship.
Mm-hmm.
So behemoths have the advantage. I mean, we're smart people. We've proven that, right? We're talented people. We've proven that. And we speak English. So we have more advantage than most of the other breeding countries for seafarers. You don't need any special skills to start at the lower end. You could start in the engine room as a wiper. You can start on the deck as an able assistant,
mm-hmm.
right? And once you get started and you start saving money, well, of course, you've got skills training that you got to do to keep moving up the ladder.
Right.
Right? And people in the inner communities in this country, given an opportunity, right? If they know that I can go and do a 1 week course, mm-hmm. a 4-core basic module, and I could be working on a cruise ship, or I could
right.
be working on a cargo ship, and I could be, because these guys, a lot of them are under a lot of stress.
Right.
Just going home, they have stress. They don't know where they can sleep. They can sleep on the floor because everybody
they
don't
have to sleep in a rotation.
They share a bed in rotation,
mm-hmm.
right? So if they could sign on to a ship where they know where every meal is going to come from, every day they got 3 squares, every day they got their own cabin, their own bed. They don't have to share bed with nobody. And they see in the world and they're away from all the stress. That's like, look, let me do that. I don't buy into this stress I get from. I can't even walk the streets.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And if we make it that readily accessible, that once they do that training, we can get them on ships, that can make a big difference. Well, employment, one thing.
Right.
But relief.
Mm-hmm.
Relief for that seafarer is what you get in the international fleet.
Now you said starting salary about $800 a month, which works out to be about that is a little under minimum wage, isn't it? Because if it's $800 a month, there are 4 weeks in a month. You're talking about, so on average you're thinking maybe $850 a month.
Well, minimum wage in the Bahamas is not minimum wage in the international
correct,
fleet.
Correct. You're very right? correct. Okay, so now there are people that will say, man, the sea is tumultuous. It is, the sea is nowhere to go and play. $800. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I could be out to sea 6 months at $800 a month and that be feasible. What do you say to the people like that?
Well, you have some people who got options. You got some people who don't have an option. They just want a job. They need to. They want money. They want exposure. They want to get away. They mm-hmm. want to do their thing. They mm-hmm. want to have money.
Mm-hmm.
These are the people that we can appeal to.
Mm-hmm.
These are the people that get in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
These are the people that you want to rescue.
Right.
Right. So the guy that doesn't have to. He is not in a situation where he's under pressure.
Right.
He may decide he don't even want to leave his girlfriend at home.
Right.
So he don't want to sail.
Right.
And there's a stigma that Bahamians don't want to go to sea.
Mm-hmm.
Utter nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have had people approach me over and over again. People come to my office. I can't get to go to sea. I did all these skills. Even officers. You have people who went to SUNY Maritime and Cal Maritime and Mass Maritime, and they cannot get on a ship as a third mate, right? Or an officer in charge of navigation watch. They have all the training. They've done everything necessary. They just cannot get linked with a ship. There's no way, nobody around that can help them. And this is a problem. And I think that in this country, if we can get, we have the advantage because we have the ship owners. We have the ships on our flag. We have the experts in the Bahamas Maritime Authority. If we can get some assistance in getting these people linked up. Now, it was easy to form the Marine Cadet Corps and encourage people. But we have to have the end of that thread, that needle threaded. Yeah, so that these people can now have an opportunity to get jobs because they can't do it on their own.
Right. They don't have the networks.
They don't have the network. They don't have the reach. They don't. They basically just want to have the skill so that they can get a job. And at the end of the day, you have people in this country now who have been trained 10, 12 years ago. And they're just sitting on it because they can't find a link. I tried to link some of them. I couldn't find a link for them. Right? Because you have to do it from the inside.
Okay, so when we look at the skill of navigation, how long does it take to become masterful at it? I mean, how exactly, you've been a captain for how long?
Well, 40 years.
When did you become good? How long did it take you to become good?
Well, I was good after about 2 years of sailing in the Bahamas. I've trained at Dartmouth. Well, of course, you've got to drive boats and all that. But to be to be skillful in navigation where you know the routes, you know how to do fixes. And the thing is, it's so easy now because we have what you call GPS. We have radar plotters. We have things that you can look at a screen and see exactly where you are. When I learned, we didn't have GPS. We had two of the ships, Marlin and Flamingo, when Flamingo got sank. But the Marlin is the only ship that had what you call a sat-nav equipment, which means every 2-3 hours you can get a fix by satellite.
Okay.
Right? But the 60 footers had nothing. We had a radar and we had our charts.
Right.
Now, navigation back then, you navigate by dead reckoning. You will project based on what you know your speed to be or what speed you intend to do.
Right.
Where you're going to be in every 15 minutes.
Right.
And then you go to the radar, you try and put on a fix. And if you're too far from land, you can't even pick up anything to take a fix off.
Right.
So
on a cloudy day, you get all kind of things to take a fix off.
You get clutters, you get this, right? So, but we learned to fix by radar. They're not fixing by radar today. You know, everybody just take a GPS lat long, bang, that's where I am. Right? And that's not only in the Defense Force, even in the commercial fleet. I remember I sailed on a ship called the Freeport Flyer on numerous occasions. Whenever my co-partner, Captain Black, would take leave, I would go and take the ship. And there were ABs, deckhands, behemoths on board. And we would sail to Florida. Sometimes we go all the way up to Jacksonville. The behemoths, I got to actually start to put on fixes. They would stand watch, and they would do absolutely nothing. I called them, and I first got on board. I said, well, you know, I need you to keep, I want you to put a fix on the chart every half hour. They'd be like, what you mean? I don't know how to do that, so I don't. And it was so easy. And once you show them, and they start to do it, they go, wow, I didn't know it was that simple. You know, I've been in this field now for 40 years, 30 years, and I've never knew I could have done that. And after a while, whenever they stand watch, I got them doing the navigation, right? And the lookout, because that's obviously important. But to become an officer on a ship, there's a lot of training involved. I had to extend my mortgage, my house mortgage, for like $11,000. So that I can go off and do a 4 to 6 months off and on, 1 week here, 2 weeks there, training to become certified. I did it in Fort Lauderdale at, there are two institutions there. We got the Maritime Professional Training, and then you get, forget the other one, I didn't go to the other one, but Star Center, that's the name of it. And you go there and you can do weekly courses. You choose what you want to do. They have a schedule, they tell you when the courses are running. And to be certified, you're told by the STCW convention, which comes under the IMO, come under Standards of Training, Certification, Watchkeeping. And that acronym is what it is. It starts with S, standards. You have to have a minimum standard of training to become a navigator, minimum standard of training to become an engineer in any capacity and all the rest of that. So based on the STCW guidelines, the courses are set up by the institution the institution have to be audited on an ongoing basis to make sure that the courses are streamlined based on the convention and the code. And so I would have done, me and a lot of other people, behemoths. That's where we go. The ones who didn't go to Cal Maritime and SUNY because we didn't have that opportunity, right? And we would do those series of course, which, you know, some of them like radar observer unlimited, you do the ARPA training, you do the advanced firefighting, you do the, and then you do your specialization, which is, you know, if you want to become a navigator, then you got to do a 3-4 weeks course. You have to do the ocean, what you call it, the ocean course, which is, I'm trying to remember what it is that most people kind of unable to, because it calls for a lot of maths.
Okay.
The celestial navigation
course.
Yeah, you have to do a coastal navigation. So it's a lot of courses you got to do and become certified. So I have like a series of certificates, right? About a dozen certificates that verify that I've done those courses. And then you need to do the ample amount of sea time to show that you've sailed enough so that you can get the certification from the Bahamas Maritime Authority, which is the entity in the Bahamas that issues licenses for international
Now, as a country, I would argue that is predominantly water, right? Like the Bahamas, I think we have more water than we do landmass, right? Are we doing enough on a national level to ensure that in our institutions of learning, like the COBs, like the BTVIs, I know that there's the Bahamas Maritime Institution, I know that there's LMJ, but are we making sure that the regular boy out of the Grove that don't know how to get into LMJ? Because I could tell somebody that's very well connected, I don't really know how you get an LMJ. I see them all the time, I see the uniforms all the time, but it's not common knowledge, right? So I imagine that if I don't know, there are people that have no idea it even exists. What are we doing to ensure that the child out of Bayntown, the little boy born in the Grove, the little boy from Camp Road, the fella from Angleston, that they know from their 5 years old, 6 years old, 12 years old, that, okay, just as they make me take food nutrition in school, they make me take hotel and tourism in school, they make me take all of these things in school, and again, our country, largely made up of water. The first time I heard the word navigation was as a 12-year-old student when I went to some symposium and decided that I wanted to sign up to do the STCW course, because I did that in high school.
Oh,
right?
Great.
I did that my last year of high school, which is where I met Alex Haley, and then we ended up in the Defense Force together.
Right.
But I did that. The second time I heard navigation was as a Defense Force recruit. I had never heard, navigation was, and I come from a family of fishermen, right? Like, but my dad, those were doing something else that was special. I crack the joke all the time that when I told my mother in ninth grade that I wanted to be a fisherman, she cried for 2 weeks. but it was because my daddy those were, they were doing it kind of harum scarum, right? They had all been lost at sea at some point in their lives. My dad had been bitten by a shark at some point in his life. And so I could imagine the trauma in her life. She just wanted to keep her boys away from that.
Yeah.
But why are we not taking a more holistic approach, making navigation something that people are aware of, teaching people that navigation can take you outside of the Bahamas, which causes you to no longer be affected by the GDP of the Bahamas, which means your income earning can go beyond that of the GDP of the Bahamas. Why are we not teaching the young boy or the young girl, because I don't want to be sexist, that, listen, if you learn this skill without a college degree, right, you could one day see Spain and Portugal and Montserrat and Antigua and America, and you can do all of that as a part of a ship crew. And you do it without a college, without a 4-year degree. It takes half of the time that you would take in college to become a pretty senior person on the ship, right? And once you did that, technically you can compete par on par with anyone in the world. As a nation predominantly made up of water, why do you think that's not been the direction?
As I indicated earlier, Levan, that is the direction. By way of the Bahamas Marine Maritime
Cadet Corps. How far has that reached, though?
The problem is at the top. When you get the certification, you can't get a ship.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is not the program not being in place. And, of course, back in the early days, we had, in the high schools, they had nautical science. Mm-hmm. They had Mr. Peter Key, or Captain Peter Key.
Mm-hmm.
He taught that for many, many years. And C.R. Walker.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that could be expanded. That could be. But you have to, first of all, have an interest. The persons, the powers that be, needs to have an interest in ensuring that this program that Mr. Peter Key ran is throughout all the schools. We have more than enough behemoths that are qualified to teach. Mm-hmm. We have people who want to get an A and B license. They got to find somebody like Mr. Glenn Lightburn, who you would know from Defense Force as well. He runs an extremely good school where he can teach you how to get your B class or your A class license. Right. He also tutor people to become internationally qualified because the same school that I went to in Fort Lauderdale, he would have gone to, and he would have gotten all the certification. Mm-hmm. And he's an extremely, I can tell you, he's an extremely good instructor. He can teach and he can prepare people. Mm-hmm. But that need to be expanded.
Right.
Now, going to LJM. LJM is really designed for officers.
Okay.
It's not designed for ratings, right? Although they now introduce a lot of ratings training. But you have more rating jobs out there in the international fleets than officers' jobs.
Right.
Right? So the question may be, why isn't it designed for international ratings training? And I'm sure they're moving toward that. But we got to get there. But what happens when the person goes and gets certified? Where are they going to go? How are they going to find a ship? We still need to have that link at the end. And this need to start from the minister and Ministry of Transport on to the Bahamas Maritime Authority, on to the Port Department. Those are the three entities responsible for maritime and for shipping and for that type of thing. And they need to get together and put something together so that we can ensure that we have the program, which we have already, basically a lot of interest, a lot of people certified, but now we have the outlet. Mm-hmm. Where these people can now be linked to ships internationally. And these ships will take them on because the ship owners understand that, look, we are behemoths. We're prepared to sail. We're prepared to take whatever salary you're gonna dish out because our people need exposure. Our people need a certificate. Look at our local mailboat fleet. You go on Port of Key Dock now. You see a handful of Filipinos for almost every ship on the Western End. Mm-hmm. Why? Because you can get them cheaper. Because we don't have the behemoths with the same type exposure and qualification as them, right? But we need to do something about that.
Because that is actually where I wanted to go next. And if you also look at the mailboat fleet, it is aging. Like, when you go out there, the captains aren't fellas that are young men. These are fellas that are 60 and above. Like, they're gray-haired men, right?
Like me.
Yeah. And I think to myself, well, I wonder how much longer the mailboat routes are going to be things that we even are able to sustain, I'm talking about talent-wise, if we aren't replacing these fellas. I mean, of course, a lot of the fellas that are doing it now, my understanding is many of them kind of just worked their way up through the rank system on the ship and became kind of acquainted with the ship and its goings-on. But, I mean, we live in a new world with all sorts of new international regulations, and although this is local navigation, I would imagine that even the mailboat service, we recently passed a law that no longer allows Dominicans on fishing vessels.
Right.
And I'm thinking to myself that maybe that may be the direction we also need to go in with our mailboats.
Exactly.
Right?
You're exactly on point.
But I'm sure you've seen the big hoo-ha that happened when the law was passed that there would be no more Dominicans working on the fishing vessels. I mean, some people wanted to burn down Parliament Square. But we cannot continue to act as though we don't live in a very small country. And I think we also have to find a way to tap into, and I'm not sure what would be the international negotiations that have to be had, but the luxury cruise line as well that comes in and out of the Bahamas is not one that is lacking in jobs. Like, I've had an opportunity to work in the Royal Bahamas Defense Force Harbor Patrol Unit. And I can tell you, I've seen one ship 10 times, and I've seen an entirely different crew each time I saw the ship, right?
That's right.
Because some people just rent the ship out.
They charter the ship out.
Yeah. How does that not materialize, though, in a way where you can get on a luxury ship, and even if you have a ship rider agreement with the luxury ship industry, you begin to see at least a Bahamian second mate or a Bahamian third mate on board of the luxury craft. And that way, we're sure that Bahamians are getting well-paying jobs that are taking them out of the country, that are gaining them exposure, gaining them international access to things, gaining them new networks that the Bahamas, the country as a whole, will benefit from. How much legislation do you think that'll take?
We don't need much legislation. We need to enforce what we have. I'm leaving. Do you know that part of the Merchant Shipping Act require that every local vessel that are non-soulless, in other words, anything under 500 gross standard does not go international, is required to have a local safety certificate. Mm-hmm. Now, what this local safety certificate does, This will cause every vessel, every mailboat, any vessel that goes in exposed waters, right, to have on board certified seafarers.
Okay.
Right? Again, this comes under the SCCW convention where you need seafarers that have to pass a course that says for vessels under 500 gross tons, as a captain, as a mate, as a deckhand, you got to do certain things. If we were to apply those things and make sure that each one of these vessels have to have that local safety certificate as mandated in the Merchant Shipping Act, and then to have that, that vessel would have to be surveyed on an annual basis. That vessel would have to be issued this local safety certificate based on surveys, based on requirements under the SCCW, based on requirements under the SOLAS Convention. And those things will call for the vessel to, first of all, be dry docked at least once every 5 years, right? The vessel to have a radio certificate, meaning the equipment on board is up to speed and the people on board know how to use them. They would need to have a hull certificate. They would need to have a load line certificate. All these things that international ships do, of course, it would be a watered-down version because it wouldn't be SOLAS.
Right.
But once you put that in place, and these vessels are required to carry licensed persons, then they wouldn't have a choice. Some of these local vessels will start sending people off to school, and people like Glenn Lightbank, he will have enough people in this program now where he could train people and certify people at these levels, right? And that will change the scope. It'll be a paradigm shift in the maritime field with the domestic or local field. We have a company here right now that is operating called Marine Tankers. Well, they may not be, I don't know if they still name Marine Tankers, but that's what I know them as, right? They are responsible for distributing the fuel from Clifton Pier to all the family islands. They also go to Turks Island, they go to Jamaica, they go to Cuba, they go all over the place, right? And these vessels are crewed primarily by behemoths.
I think I know which ones you're talking about, because I think I have a friend of mine that works on one of those fuel vessels that pulls into Turks Island.
Yeah. And do you know why?
I was shocked to find out that they had Bahamian crews.
They have Bahamian captain, Bahamian mates. Now, some of the engineers are not Bahamian. Most of the engineers are not Bahamian. Right. Because we don't have... Bahamians are not exposed to understand that you can become an engineer on a ship. This is the course you need to do. This is the amount of money you're going to make. The chief engineer on that ship makes almost just about the same thing as the captain.
Plus, the only Bahamian mechanic I ever knew that could have fixed anything was my daddy. Bahamian mechanics can't fix nothing.
Well, you was in Defense Force. We had very good mechanics.
Yeah, we do have good mechanics there.
And engineers.
So my daddy and them. Everybody else, I ain't sure about that. And maybe it's just not in line with who we are as a people. Like, Bahamians don't really fix things, right?
But there's no requirement to have a certified engineer on a mailboat. So the engineer is the fellow who's a mechanic who they pick up and they say, man, look here, something go wrong. And part of the reasons why we have so much, even in the Defense Force, we have so much ships that are broken down. You ever hear about a tropical ship out of service?
No.
Because they break down and then they... No, because they do things on time. They do things. They have certified people. We need to do the same thing in this country. We operate too much on faith. We don't operate on what is put in place for us to use. We have things in place to use. And that's why I made the statement last time that in the Defense Force, and I don't worry with the Commodore and the previous Commodore and all the rest, before you make somebody XO on a ship, some of those ships in the Defense Force is over 500 tons.
Right.
Some are under. But before you make him an XO, make sure that he goes off to Fort Lauderdale and he's certified to be a... mate on a vessel under 500 gross tons. They have those courses. And to do that, they got to do the ARPA and the radar, and they, because you ain't got the certification with all those things.
Right.
And they could link in with the BMA, and they could act, you know what Jamaica does? Jamaica sends some of their Coast Guard personnel, once this guy is enthusiastic enough, off on commercial ships, and they still paying him. He's on the commercial ship as a mate. Until he could become a master mariner while he's still in the Jamaican Defense Force.
Okay.
Right? Why don't we have that program in the Bahamas? Right? Because I know somebody who tried. And I was encouraging him. But, of course, the persons at the top, they didn't share that vision.
If we're doing so many things by faith, Cap, how do you imagine we continue to do so without mass casualty or mass tragedy?
Well, we are very fortunate, I'll tell you that. We're very fortunate. I mean, the big incident that I recall is the United Star.
The United Star.
And Sea Hauler, right? I did the inquiry on that, the initial inquiry.
Okay.
And I can tell you, I wasn't surprised because as a ship inspector, as a ship surveyor for small vessels, I did most of the mailboats, mm-hmm. right, when I worked at the BMA, especially the ones that want to go to the States because they need to be Caribbean coded. Mm-hmm. So for that certification, they had to have certain certification in place. And I would go and I would do their surveys. And a lot of things had to change, mm-hmm. right? You ask them to do a drill, they don't know what you're talking about.
Okay.
So you got them to the point where they could have done a proper fire drill, a man overboard drill. They had maintenance program for the engineering. They had programs for their life raft, make sure their life raft are being maintained and all of that. So the things that are required in the arena of maritime, those vessels started to come around and do,
mm-hmm.
right? All because they wanted to go to Florida once a month or once a week.
Mm-hmm.
But why can't that be the standardized case? And it's required to be the standardized case under the local safety certificate. But we have a problem
that... No one polices it.
Well, not only no one polices it. The entities that are mandated for it just don't even acknowledge it.
Mm. So, okay, so then, Cap, should we be looking at kind of recruiting young men? Like, I know you say we don't have the ships, right? But if they have the training, then, you know, I always tell people, opportunity finds training. If you have the skill, the opportunity will find you, right? Should we then, because again, like you said, there's the LMJ, there's the BMA, there's Campbell Shipping, and you named about five grouping of people, our good friend Glenn Lightburn, all doing this training, right? And I am of the opinion that this is the way that you get money into the hands of regular people. If you want money, it's mm-hmm. in the ocean. Go and get it.
Definitely.
Should we then look with more specificity at trying to create an agency that goes around and recruits people to be able to have feeder programs, and the more people we certify, possibly the opportunity will open?
The opportunity. If you continue to do what we're doing, right? Right now, I told you we have a whole heap of people who are certified already.
Mm-hmm.
They just can't find jobs on ships. If you certify more people, but you don't have that outlet at the top for mm-hmm. them to get on ships, it's going to become a very frustrating... It's already a frustrating situation. It's going to be exacerbated to, I don't know what, but cause right now it's bad.
But I see foreigners working here all the time as dive boat captains or master divers on dive boats and that kind of stuff. And I'm thinking to myself, if people from other places can come here and do things like be a dive master, right? When I'm sure I know dive masters, they don't have the certification to be a dive master, but they have enough dive time to be a dive anything, right?
Yeah.
I think about people like Stanley DeVodem who've been diving from before I had teeth. They just aren't certified dive masters, but we have people that come in as certified dive masters, simply because they've done the training. No other reason. They probably don't have near as much dive time. Can we not then make our, like, can the Bahamas not become the country in the Caribbean or the country in the world where people say, oh, if you need shipmates, if you need farers, if you need exos, if you need, not chief engineers, because I think the Hondurans will have that covered, but anything on a ship you need, you can go to the Bahamas, that's where you find them. Could it be that we are just not selling it correctly?
Well, we'll be behind the eight ball because you got Jamaica with the Caribbean Maritime Institution. They may have changed the name since I was mm-hmm. involved with it. They train seafarers to do everything. But Jamaica does not have a fleet of ships.
Mm-hmm.
They may have 50 ships under their flag,
mm-hmm.
right? That they try and funnel their people to.
Mm-hmm.
But we already have a fleet of ships under our flag that we can utilize that path once it's created
mm-hmm.
by the persons at the top to have our people going in those areas. We have a lot of Jamaican seafarers. I'd hire people out of Jamaica to be engineers and all the rest of that when I was managing ships,
mm-hmm.
right? Because we don't have the Bahamians with the certification to be engineers, not even in the defense force,
mm.
right? So we need to change our mindset for engineering. But as far as seamen are concerned, we got tons of people who want to sail. We got tons of people who are willing to take that sacrifice. They only want to know that, look, when I get the certification, I can get it. And they want young people.
Mm.
I talk about, you know, people who cannot get a job otherwise because they don't have no real qualification, but they were able to go and do the four basic core training and an able seaman course in Holland College.
Mm.
And they did what they had to do.
And they got grit so they could make it out to sea.
But they can't get on the ship.
Mm. Let's take a call. Come on in, caller, you're on.
Yeah, good morning. I'm enjoying the show, man.
Thank you.
Yes, I just wanted to ask the question. How can you go about getting the training? Not necessarily for myself, but I have two sons. Now, they may not necessarily have the academic, so if he can probably put out some information on that, I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you. Do you know how people go about getting in contact with things like the LMJ, the BMA, or any of the training institutions?
They can start by calling the Port Department.
Okay.
The Port Department, they can also call the Bahamas Maritime Authority.
Is Mr. Rogers still there?
Mr. Rogers, I think he still works at the Port Department. Mm-hmm.
He was there when I did my B in 2010.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, but most of them are still. I'm not sure if Mr. Rogers is retired or not, but I know he's a little older than me, so he mm-hmm. could have been
could
retired.
Be, yeah.
But he may still be there.
Okay.
But the Port Department, I don't know their number, but they're in the phone book.
Yeah.
You can Google them.
Yeah, I think you can also Google Glenn's place. I remember what the name of
Gadites it is. Gadites Maritime.
Gadites Maritime.
G-A-D-I-T-E-S. Gadites.
Okay.
Maritime mm-hmm. is Glenn Lightburn. And okay. He'll be happy to assist with. And he does, I think, personal training now because he, for some reason, he can't find enough people to put in a classroom
okay.
to make a class. So he basically does tuition. He trains people how to certify.
Okay.
Yeah. So he do one-on-one more than anything else now. But once we mandate that what's on the books start to happen, mm-hmm. He'll be able to have class after class after class.
Okay.
You know, and we'll be able to start weeding out the foreigners and replacing them with behemoths.
Which section of the Board Department is responsible for this kind of training?
I guess they could call the general number. They can ask for Craig Curtis, who's the deputy port controller now.
Mm-hmm.
He'll be able to channel them in the right direction. I don't think they have a specific section mm-hmm. that deals with this, right? But I know they have people like Leroy, people who actually puts on the A&B licenses when it's time to put it on.
Yeah, Captain Bain did my exam.
Yeah.
Leroy Bain.
Leroy, yeah. So yeah. So once you call the party department, general line, they'll put the person on to some technical entity that can assist them.
A text right here is saying $800 a month is plenty money if you have no overhead expenses. Hey, Levin, you have had on some amazing officers so far. When are you having on Clinton Johnson? One day I'm going to invite Clinton Johnson and see if he comes. We'll see how that works out. So, Cap, where do we go from here? Because, you know, I am of the opinion, and this is something that has been a passion of mine. Like, I tell people, there are some people that I would like to see or some things that I would like to see. And one of the things is where we begin to do navigational science and dive science is an automatic thing in the Bahamas so that everybody learns it, so that every Bahamian male, boy, child. And I'm saying boy children because I just feel like girl children could always find something to do. Like, girls don't ever have employment issues, right? Somehow. I all of the girls that I know, let me say this, all the girls that I know could find a job in the morning if they want one. I don't know how they do it. It is usually the young men around me that I see struggle with employment. And so I cannot come to any other conclusion except for they simply do not have a skill that people need. And if they don't have a skill that people need, then we've got to give them a skill that they can actually trade both in the Bahamas and out of the Bahamas. And I think two of the most versatile skills that you can use almost anywhere in the world is navigational science and dive science because 70% of the world is water, right? You can't go wrong with it. And I am hopeful that, you know, through conversations like these, people like yourself, myself, and whomever else, people like Glenn and those, can try to figure out how do we capture more of these boys. And I understand your thing, which is, even when you capture them, now you've got to find another opportunity for them. But we've got to have conversations like this with the Minister of Transport, who I am not exactly impressed by this one, but who knows what the next one will be like. And maybe this is something that people need to simply bring to the minister's attention because minister doesn't mean omniscient, right? So he may just not be aware. And I think that we have got to try to make him aware that, sir, there are X amount of ships that are under our flag, 1,500, I think you said?
Yeah, over 1,400 for sure. It used to be 1,700 when I was with the BMA, but they lost some ships because they cleaned up the flag a bit and got rid of those old ships
right.
that caused detention.
And then there's the luxury crafts that come in and out of here. And like I tell you, you can board one luxury craft 10 times a year and never see the same crew twice. You may see the same captain, but never see the same crew twice. How do Bahamians tap into that? How do we begin to replenish the mail boat system? How do we begin to, since we now have the legislative power, replenish the fishing boat system. Because I'm telling you, the people that I know that are out there running fishing boats are people like Bala, and Bala 60-odd. He can't do it much longer.
Well, unfortunately, fishing does not come under the same regulations as vessels flying for hire.
But we need people with the, but the skills are similar.
You can make the skill, just like how you need a license to drive a car.
Correct.
You can say, well, okay, you need a license. And that could be, they have a course in the States for one we call a six-pack course. Mm-hmm. Well, of course, they expect you to come with a little bit of experience. Mm-hmm. And you got to pass that to be a master on a private vessel in the U.S., mm-hmm. right? We could do a similar thing here, but let's start with what we have. Yeah. We have vessels that apply for hire. Each one of them need to have a licensed captain. Mm-hmm. And we're not talking A and B license if they go and beyond the protected waters.
Okay.
A lot of people believe that if you get an A license, you can take a ship anywhere in the Bahamas.
You cannot.
Not so. You can operate in any harbor of the Bahamas. Harbor. Right. Once you go on in the open seas, you need a CCW certification.
Mm. Cap, thank you so much for joining me. That's my music. That made me
thank you too, my friend.
So we've got to figure out how to fix it. You know, we're going to continue to have conversations like this because I believe we can fix it. And I keep inviting people like Captain Glenn Bean to see if we can figure out how. Anyway, you know my voice, it's Stephen Miller. Thank you so much for joining me. This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, the station for fresh news and smart talk. So don't move because they've got the news and it's next.
Hands to the heavens, no man, no weapon. Formed against, yes, glory is destined. Every day winning
this and men. This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.